जयमा। सो वी कंटिन्यू विद द स्टोरीज फ्रॉम भागवत पुराण। नाउ बिकॉज वी हैव टेकन स्पेसिफिकली द एंगल ऑफ स्टोरीज, वी आर लिविंग आउट मेनी चैप्टर्स विच आर वेरी प्रोफाउंड एंड वेरी ब्यूटिफुल। इफ वन गेट्स इन टू इट, देर इज नो लिमिट टू इट। देर इज अ होल कॉस्मोलॉजी विच इज गिवन देयर। एंड if you are from the science background initially, because the names are different, presented in a slightly different way, for example, it says that it's not only earth which is in motion, but sun is in motion, sun is the center. It doesn't say that earth is the center, and many other things. The whole galaxy is in drift. It speaks about the Milky Way, it speaks about the different constellations. Very fascinating actually, but that's a different subject altogether. But one of them which is very interesting, it's the story of, not story again, there is a description of Sheshnag. Now Sheshnag we all have heard, and we have the image of Sheshnag as the thousand-headed serpent who is in the lap of which, or on his shayya, on his bed, Lord Vishnu is sleeping and Lakshmiji is by his side. In one of his conversations, Sri Aurobindo says, it's a passing conversation. He mentions in it in his writings also on Isha Upanishad, but detailed writing, Isha Vashi Upanishad, where there is a guru-student samvad. But I am referring to a small little conversation he had with one of the disciples, but before he came to Pondicherry. Even then, with his yogic vision, he says that you think that all these are just stories about Vishnu sleeping in on the bed of serpent, but these are true things. And he describes them in Isha Vashi Upanishad. It's a worth read if one wants to really. It's only based on the first 7 slokas of the Isha Upanishad, but it's very amazing. So he speaks about the great serpent. It's called as Anantanag, meaning thereby is it's time but endless time. It's the power which Nagas in general, Nagas were powers which were very closely rooted to earth. So they are powers of earth. Now it is also used for the Naga and serpents. So you must know the difference. Also because the serpents actually live inside the earth and they draw their energy from the earth. So that's why you will see many of the images mixed together. But if you read the original description of Sheshnag, of whom Lakshmanji is an avatar, Balram is an avatar. So it's not like that he is like a cobra and sitting like that. The original description is extremely beautiful, and he has many hands, and he is actually the reflection of the Supreme Lord in the cosmic waters down below. Below Patal, if you say what is below Patal, the lowest stratum. So in this scheme, there are 7 worlds which are underworlds which are described. If you read Sri Aurobindo's Descent in Night, you will see all of them in sequence. But he will not use the name because they are like going down like this. And what is below the Rasatal, which is the last is Patal, Rasatal, and then Patal. So that is Sheshnag or Anantanag. So he is the one who is none else but the Lord, Supreme Lord, who is lying below as the power that draws all things and unfolds, time unfolds as per him. And then you have the image where on his many hoods there are various systems of worlds, and on one of them there is earth, and the scripture describes that earth from that dimension looks like less than a mustard seed. How did they see this? Today you have the telescope, you can talk about it. It looks less than a mustard seed. That's how it looks. And yet it is an important place from certain perspective. Now when you say that there is the divine who is sleeping in the cosmic waters, there are visions of the mother which describe the divine who is sleeping inside the cosmic waters. And he holds all things together. Therefore he is called, one of his names, there are, you see, he is called as Sankarshan. So you have the word Krishna. Krishna is whatever, the power that draws all things, attracts. So Krishna attracts all things. So we have Akarshan. Akarshan is attraction between beings. Vikarshan, repulsion between human beings. And you have Sankarshan. Sankarshan is same as Seshnag. It's the power that holds all things. Now, what would it be in terms of our material universe? It is the power of gravity. And Sankarshan is the power which holds together the material universe. Otherwise, things will just flit away. Now, he is described as a being because if you go back to the original understanding that there is Brahman himself is held by the Supreme Being. So this idea of Supreme Being or the experience of Supreme Being is very prominent in the Bhagavad Puran. It's not, the things don't end by Brahman. He's Parabrahman, beyond Brahman, and he's the Parameshwara and he's Shakti. So that's how. Now we are not getting into that, though at several places I have spoken about this idea of what is the being, not just idea, but the actual experience one can have. So Sankarshan is the power which is right at the base, below the deepest depths. You see, when you relate with one of the experiences of the mother, mother has spoken of different experiences of this kind. But remember the message of 1959, at the very bottom of the inconscience. Yes, so there is that water which is there, and she sees there the seeds of the new creation, and it casts her upward. And she describes this being, and she goes down below, and when he sees this being, it is not there in collected works, it's there in six visions of the mother, which were documented in Cosmic Philosophy, which was published by Max Theon. And we had taken out an All India magazine in which these visions were published, but otherwise they are not available in standard reading. And she says that I dived into these depths below the waters, right at the very bottom. And she sees this great being who is sleeping, and she describes him at very beautiful, iridescent head. Probably that's why the cobra story must have come. And all creation is emerging from his heart. And she sees that, and the moment she meets him, he opens his eyes. Now this was the indication that the time for a new creation has come. So Sankarshan is the power which is asleep below, and he's the personality of the Supreme Godhead, who is not Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh themselves are his aspects and powers. That's how it is described in the Bhagavad Puran. And Krishna is the avatar of that Supreme. And now we can say, since we are at it, that Shurbindo, Sri Krishna fuses into Shurbindo. And in his own yoga, if you see, Sri Krishna has a long, long, right from 1908 or even before, till 1926, when he completely fuses with Shurbindo, there is a great, great role of Sri Krishna in the yoga of Shurbindo. One of the places Shurbindo says, we are carrying his work forward. So all this comes together, and in the Bhagavad Puran, you see them in the form of symbol stories. They are not just symbols. Means it's not that somebody made a story to speak something, but they are realities Shubhendu speaks about, which can be experienced by yogis, and it's the power which is lying at the base of the universe. So again, in the individual, that power is also asleep. In the Muladhar, which is the Kundalini Shakti. It is the power of the Divine Mother which is lying at the base. And the upholder of that power is Sankarshan. He is the power that draws all things, keeps all things, holds. Otherwise, see, without gravity, what would happen? Everything would start, you know. Only there will be centrifugal forces, but forces which hold together. Then with him comes Lakshmiji, who is harmonizing all this movement. So it's amazing. So there is a description of Sankarshan toward the end of book 4, where he is described, and how many people who don't understand him, they remain forever tied to earth. And there is a reason why he holds them there. That is also described. And they just think that enjoying earthly life is all that we are here for. And when they look into, you know, his eyes, they feel he's very anger prone. But he is not anger prone. You see your own reflection in him. If you see the story of Lakshman and Balram, you will understand. So Lakshman appears as if he is anger prone, because he is the avatar of this Anant Nag. Nag here is the power of the extreme power which is there implicit within matter. The earthbound power. He holds the material universe. So that's how it is described. It's a beautiful description. So this is one part of it. But we'll go now to the stories part. So in the next canto, it starts with the story of Ajamil. Some of us may have heard him. We as children grew up with this bhajan. So the bhajan was Ajamil. I'll say in Hindi, then translate in English. Ajamil adham me nathi kya burai, magar maut ki jab ghadi uski aai. So Ajamil is described as adham, fallen one, in whom every kind of burai, evil is there. But what happened when the time of death comes? So the third line is, to bete Narayan ki thi rat lagai. So he had a son called Narayan, whom he started calling. Turat khul gaye uske vaikunth dware, Hare Krishna Govind Mohan Murare. We used to, grew up with this tradition. Ki the vaikunth, the gates opened. So what is the story exactly? Story is that Ajamil is actually a very pious person to start with. So we can relate with this story now. It's not like anybody fallen and Vaikunth Dware, though the name of God has a very great power, and Sri Aurobindo affirms this. So Ajamil is a pious person. He is as a young Brahmin. Again, Brahmin has nothing to do with Pandey Sharma, but those whose mind, thought, heart was turned toward the highest. So he would follow the scriptures. He was a brahmachari. He would, not undertake like wine, all this. He would never cheat anyone. He's honest. He's truthful. All the checklist. You name it and Ajamil had them. So he would worship every day, bring all the nice things and worship the Lord. And he knew all the scriptures and Lord was very happy with him. Now what happens one day? Now this story is very profound, much more profound than what it appears on the surface. So one day he goes to the forest. And there he sees a man enjoying a woman. She is a very loose woman and the man is equally a loose man. And the two are just enjoying physical relationship and all kinds of entreaties. And when he sees this, he has stayed away from all this. Suddenly his mind and senses and heart are overcome with desire. And then once he's overcome with desire, then his life takes a different turn altogether. So this man, because it's so strong desire that comes into him, that he starts chasing women. And as he starts chasing women one after another, and now to take care of the women, he needs money. So he starts cheating. He starts robbing. He becomes a butcher. He wants to anyhow earn money because he has to give it to women. And all of these, none of them, and he was married before that. It's not that he was not married. His wife is described as a very beautiful, devoted and God-loving person. So his wife is there. It's not that women are like that. She is very nice, but he forgets her, abandons her, starts chasing women, money, starts drinking, he loses gradually everything. And gets completely entangled in moha of the children. And of them, the youngest of the child is, his name is Narayan. So now we understand why in ancient times in India, the name of children was generally name of some god or some aspect of the god or other. There is a logic that if nothing else, maybe because the story of Ajamil is there in the Indian subconscious mind. So thus he becomes sick, he becomes full of tuberculosis, all these things come into him. And then one day when he is dying, he feels that his throat is getting choked and he is on the verge of death. So he remembers his most favorite son, the youngest one, little one, cute one. And in desperation he says, Narayan, 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 Narayan. The word Narayan is a great power, isn't it? The mother talks of certain mantras which have a great power in it. And she speaks about one of the mantra is the mantra to Narayan, which is Narad's mantra. Om Namo Narayana. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's also there. Mother's own mantra is Om Namo Bhagavate. So Om Namo Narayana. So Narayana is the Godhead who is immanent in creation. Everywhere he is there. He dwells in the waters. Nar dwells within man. He is the closest. If you want to reach out to God, closest is he who dwells in man. He is Narayan. He has made him his abode. Sri Aurobindo speaks about this word. He says that Narayan is not just the Lord who is in the cosmic waters, but he is the Lord who dwells within man. That's how he describes this whole. So, as soon as he calls Narayan, suddenly four Vishnu Dut come. They are the denizens of sevaks or servants of Narayan, who is calling our Lord. So first the Dut will go. Meanwhile, he sees there are Yam Dut who are also there. They are there with their pash, and they have tied the noose and they have begun to pull him, because this man is a totally gone case. Drunk, debauch, every unspeakable thing, and they are pulling him. So the Vishnu Dut who see him say, hold on, you can't take him. They say, what do you mean? Then they say, this man, he's a scoundrel, he's a cheat, he's this, he's that. And he has to meet his punishment. And then they describe the whole, how the cosmic law operates. So they say that, well, the cosmic law, there are three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. The sattva gun people do good, they enjoy the heavens and then they come back. The rajagun people are mixed. So they enjoy the heavens and then they have to, or hell first and heaven later on. And the tamoguna living completely in darkness, they have to go to hell and then they come back. So this fellow has lived in tamogun. So we have come to drag him. So the Vishnu Dut have a dialogue. There is a dialogue which takes place. This dialogue is very similar to, in the Vedas, there is a dialogue between Sarma, the goddess of intuition, and the Dasyus who are hidden in the subconscious caves. These Dasyus have stolen the light, the cattle, a light basically. So they don't want to give it, release it for the world. They hide it, and Sarma, the divine goddess, which is portrayed as a dog, she goes there and there is a discussion that why don't you surrender? They don't surrender. So finally, she comes back and tells Indra, here they are hidden. So Indra, with this thunderbolt, decimates the caves and finishes the Dasyu. But before that, Rishi Agastya drinks the cosmic water. This is another very fascinating story. But we'll come to it some other time. So here it is in the form of Devadut and Yamdut. Vishnudut and Yamdut. They are having a dialogue with each other. So the Vishnudut asks him first that, why are you taking him? He says, that's a job description. And our master is the greatest of all. Everything is bound by Yama. He is the Lord over this material universe. And we are not acting unjustly, because he asks, what is just about this act? So they say, he has been like that. And we have our records. We have our computer. We have our, everything is there. So we have to take him, drag him. And then he has to suffer in hell, where he will go through purification. So that's a, like, hell is basically to make you so much suffering. So sometimes I say, human beings have two choices. Suffer upon earth and learn the lesson. Or suffer in hell and then come back. He says that, you know, he has to go through. He has not learned his lesson on earth. So he has to go through that process of purification. Then he'll come back. So he says, okay, you have spoken your truth. They describe about sattva, rajo, tamo and how the law operates. That if you are a sattva gun person, you will go enjoy some heaven and come back. And if you are a rajogun person, you will have heaven and hell. If you are a tamogun pradhan person, you are a deluded fellow. You will have to go through basically hell, in which you are there for some time and then you will come back. So this is the basic law. Not going into the details. So then they say, who are you? They say, we are beyond the law. So, I mean, basically they say, we are coming from the Supreme Lord. They say, but who is Supreme Lord? Our Lord is the Supreme Lord. They say, no, you don't know. Supreme Lord is the Narayana who is there, and this man at his moment of departure called Narayan. By this very fact that he has called the Supreme Lord, we have come. We don't care whom he called, why he called. He called the Supreme Lord, and somehow this has reached to us, and we are here, and now we have to fulfill. We have come by his prerna. So we are not letting him go with you. And while they're engaged in this discussion, they already untie the knot, nose. So his life energy goes back into the body. And then the Yamdut realize that they are very beautiful and very, they look powerful and beautiful. And he is mesmerized. The Yamduts are mesmerized and they go away. And then, before what happens to this man, though I'm just going back and forth canto-wise. So the next canto, what happens to him is described subsequently. But he goes back, the Yamdut, and tell Yamraj that we thought you are the most powerful. You are the settler of the score, the Dharmaraja, based on action. See, now see carefully, in certain religions, it's pure karma. That's it. Even now, many people even in Hindu thought, Sanatana Dharma, think it's karma mechanically unrolling. He says, we thought you are the person who meets out people's karma and you do justice. So we don't know what is this. They could open the noose. Nobody we know of can open the noose. Their doot has opened the noose, let alone we could do nothing. So then Dharmaraj, that is Yamraj, explains to them that no, I am not the Lord. I am only an executioner of the power of the Lord. You remember when Death says in Savitri, after he is transformed, he says, she tells him, be still my instrument. He says, I am the instrument of the Lord. I am not the Supreme Lord. Yes, I have a great hold over material creation, but the Lord is the Lord. And then he says, all Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, Gandharvas, Vidyadhar, everybody worships the Lord. And there is none greater than him. So, whatever has happened is the right thing to happen, and henceforth never go near and trouble anybody who is dedicated and surrendered to the Lord. You don't have a jurisdiction there. Sounds like a fantastic story. K.R. Srinivas Iyengar, who was not just a great, of course, intellectual, but he was professor of English. He wrote wonderful books, including autobiography of Sri Aurobindo. So he describes an incident where his wife was overtaken with very high fever for many days. And then she started seeing, scientifically you would say delirious state, but delirium is basically you are beginning to experience otherworldly things. Because that veil is for a moment lost. High fevers can do that, because the logical understanding brain, just like in deep sleep, that is undone. So she sees Yamadut around her and she tells him, I am seeing Yamadut around me. And then Srinivas Iyengar tells her, you tell them I am mother's child. They dare not come near me. And then she sleeps off, wakes up, she's fine. Documented story. And she still remembered that they had come. And she started saying inside, because she was not in that state, Ma, 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 I am mother's child. And they vanished. So, it's just like the story of Ajamil, except that she was a nice lady. There are a number of stories I have gathered like that, real stories. There was another person who didn't believe in Shobindo as divine, but he loved Savitri. He said he's a great Bengali. He was a Bengali, so Bengali to Bengali, intellectual. And he didn't, mother, great lady, but nothing more than that. So when relics had come, he was suddenly overtaken. I have spoken about his story. But on his deathbed, he suddenly started seeing, when people are around, doctors, anxious faces, suddenly tells his wife, "Ek ki korche tumi? What are you doing all of this? Mother is here. She has come to take me. Why you people are doing all this? Remove." That's how he departed. Mother has spoken that all her children, they don't go through the process of death. So there is, I have heard about this, I have too many stories about it, so I am not entering into all these stories. But just to say that these are not just stories, they are facts of inner experience of quite a few, including once when Champaklalji left her body, his body. So Kavita didn't know, nobody knew anything about it. And she saw one night before a dream, where she saw that Champaklalji is there on the cot and the phoenix, that great eagle, has come around him. And next day we came to know that Champaklalji has left his body. So it was a prevision. And the mother describes this great eagle who comes to take, and of course Champaklalji himself said that, you know, he saw Mother and Sri Aurobindo come to take. So there is this great eagle who comes to take in his wings. You may call him Garud, mother has not used the word or whatever. And then one is escorted through a special passage which the mother has made. For whom? For anyone who has even a little faith in the divine. Doesn't matter which form. And she said, because after death journey can be quite painful. So she changed the rules of the game. She changed many rules of the game. One of them is this, and this again is documented, confirmed by the mother herself. So it's not a story later on people are saying. And those who have faith in the divine in any form, you don't even have to last moment remember and call. They are automatically put in that tunnel, which is a tunnel of light, through which they go safe, protected. No more vital worlds and all that drag and pull which after death experience, which can be quite unnerving. So they don't go to Yamraj, they don't go to Yamdut. And Sri Aurobindo, again, documented in 1951 when this lady had died, Mridu, very despotic, very arrogant, very anger prone. She would threaten with suicide if somebody didn't listen to her. She wouldn't listen to even mother. Hathili, so obstinate. She would sit, she would not listen to mother. Mother would say, move away from the door, she will not. And when she died, the mother saw that Sri Aurobindo comes down and takes her along. And then mother asked Sri Aurobindo, she too? Sri Aurobindo said, yes. Anyone who leaves his body here, she has used the word here, but now I'll explain that here part also. Because people say, is it only in Pondicherry? Because ashram itself has become a subtle space. Will not go to the realm of death, he will come straight to me. So these are things of inner truth which we don't understand and don't realize because we are, our vision is very limited, partly because Sankarshan Devata holds us to the material creation. He doesn't let us see beyond. So gravity has the double effect. Even it holds our consciousness tied to the material creation, because that's his job description. So above is the Lord, below is the Lord. In between are we carrying the Lord inside us. That's how the Kundalini Yoga will describe it. The base of the spine is the Divine Mother, at the top is the Divine Mother, and in between is the Divine Mother. So these are very profound occult truths. So meanwhile, when these beings learn that, okay, we are not supposed to disturb and go near those who call the Lord, doesn't matter, whatever they may have been, it's not our job description. If he has called the Lord, stay away. Remember, what does the Gita say? Gita says the same thing. It says that if at the, of course, Gita puts a little qualifier. So it says that those who remember me at the time of death, they attain liberation. This is unconditional. It doesn't say whether they, whoever they were. And then the Gita says, therefore, O Arjun, remember me at all times. This Sri Aurobindo remind that it's not like you have a blanket, because if you have not remembered the Lord suddenly last moment, if you read the description of death in Yog Vasishth, you see that whole things turn topsy-turvy. Your heart is pulled to all things you are attached to. Even his heart was pulled to Narayan, his son. But luckily, so you have an option, change your names, your loved ones, everyone you are attached to. In our homes, Indian homes, at some point of time, this used to be a refrain, you know, children who were little naughty, and always there was a naughty child who was very sweet and cute, was called as little Krishna. And even now, some people I know do that. So it was like a safety. Anyways, so he says, you will not go near them. And the mother says that they will come straight to Sri Aurobindo's land. They will not go through the realm of death. So it's such a similarity. And then, meanwhile, what happens to Ajamil? So what happened to him? That is the interesting part. So because by mistake, out of attachment, he called Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. Suddenly it was a moment of death, a moment of crisis. His whole past suddenly tumbled forward, came up. Try doing this. One of the powerful words, Ma. I've had one of my experience about just calling the power of a name. Quite a few. Ma. It can throw away all kinds of forces all around. Sri Aurobindo's letters are there. So I'm not saying anything by myself. So I'll read one of them. So then, because he called Narayan and he had done some kind of a sadhana of Narayan as a young boy, suddenly all this illusion which was holding him back crumbled like a magic building undone. This described in Savitri. That like a magic building it was undone and he remembered, who I am, what am I doing? So he realized that, my God, what did I do? Suddenly he's overtaken by all kinds of, you know, feelings. And he said, because he remembered what happened between the Yamadut and the Devadut. So he says, now I have got a second chance. So you see, don't believe in Zindagi na milegi dobara. Even in one life you get dobara. And if you are a mother's child, tibara, chobara. As long as you have the aspiration, as long as you are surrendered and open to grace, there is no limit to her compassion. And therefore, you have a chance to rebuild yourself. So what does Jamil do? In the traditional story, it's like he was always a sinner and suddenly he called God and he got freed immediately. No. He came back to life. He remembered all the dialogue. And his past, the beautiful past, came forward. And then he started spending his time. He went to Haridwar, which of course can mean figuratively either the land Haridwar or Haridwar, the gateway to the Lord. And he started remembering the Lord, doing Naam Jap as it is called today. And then when the time came, the Lord himself, he was so full of the Lord and the Lord came to take him. So what happens to karmic law? See, we keep hearing all this mechanical idea of karmic law. This, I think, is Yamduts have given this kind of a strict karmic law. Because in none of the stories in Bhagavad, you will see that understanding of karmic law. If he was a sinner, doesn't matter. Okay, he took the name of the Lord. Some good things he did, some bad things he did. Therefore, it should go like that. It's never like that. So that is explained by Yama. He says to his Yamdut, he says, see, what happens? He says, this good and bad thing applies in general category. So there is a general quota. But there is something called as the grace of the Lord which overrides these things. And you have to understand it. So we may say, oh, this is all fantastic story of Bhagavat. Now, the most intellectual, modern gurus, if I may say so, Sri Aurobindo, what does he has to say about it? Because we present him in a very intellectual way, super mind, over mind. By the time you read, you say, where is my mind? What does Sri Aurobindo has to say about the yoga in this context? Now, Sri Aurobindo's words, I'll read just some of them constantly. As a rule, the only mantra used in this sadhana is that of the mother or of my name and the mother. People want all kinds of mantras. Because there is no mantra which is greater than God's name. All other mantras are vibrations, access key to states of consciousness. But the divine name, he is of course nameless, eternal, but he assumes a name, has the power to liberate straight away, because divine has access anywhere. If you are going with the, in the modern limited context with the president, do you have to everywhere show your identity card? It is so silly. You're just sitting with him, that's it. But if you are going with somebody else to meet the president, then your identity card based on that. He has to say, look here, he has to do this work, he has to go there. Okay, you can leave him, isn't it? But if you are going with the president, will anybody ask you, where are you going? What is your qualification? So this is the whole secret here. He says, there is a mantra in this yoga, but it is only mother's name or Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo, Name Anando, Mama, Mama. Usually, the mother's name has the full power in it. Because she is the embodiment of power, all Sri Aurobindo's letters. But in certain states of consciousness, the double name may have a special effect. But mother's name is enough. What it cannot do, he says, it cannot change the physical consciousness. So that is not there in the story also. If you want the complete, what Sri Aurobindo is attempting, transformation. But there is so much which just the Naam Jap can do. So what it does is, I do not believe a mantra can change the physical consciousness. What it does, if it is effective, now he is talking of mantra, not the Naam Jap, is to open the consciousness and to bring into it the power of that which the mantra represents. Now in the Bhagavad, there is something very interesting which is mentioned in the same, this canto. So it says, you know, people do Vedic rituals, they do yajna, they do all kinds of mantra and different things. It is okay, it helps you to get clear of your debt, the papa, that prayaschit. You have done some deed and you want to clear your consciousness, it's okay. But it doesn't take away the tendency to sin. So it will happen, you have cleared it, but you will go back and do it again. But the divine name can go to the roots and burn it, take it, pluck it away. I can go into its metaphysics and logic behind it, but for the moment, just to take it that the divine name not only removes the effects of past deeds, which yajnas, mantras, various activities can do, but it can remove the tendency towards evil from the very roots. So, all that I can say is personally, there is nothing I am saying which I like to say which I have not at some level experienced. I don't like philosophy. I like, you know, whatever you have actually seen. So where can we use this name? Do I have to take a good bath and apply some turmeric and sit and... The name of the divine is usually called in for protection. This experience I have had very clearly. Quite a few. Just ma, ma, ma. It has the power to repel, arrest, and do whatever else is required. It's the greatest safety. So simple. For adoration, for increase of bhakti, for the opening of the inner consciousness, for the realization of the divine in that aspect, as far as it is necessary to work in the subconscious for that, the name must be effective there. Now you understand why I am not in favor of all these courses that are being done in the name of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. When we have such a simple, direct thing and straight from Sri Aurobindo and the mother. I am not saying anything of mine. Do we really need to go through all those complicated things trying to, you know, one can do it and it's a help. Especially if we have faith. But there is something much simpler. Any conditions? Yes, he says, the effectiveness of Naam Jap, this is what was told to Ajamil, depends on the person and how he does it. Basically, what happened in Ajamil was intensity. He was on deathbed, he was calling his son. But the intensity, the emotion that went into it, it was not a mechanical thing he was doing. He was not just doing ma, 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 ma. It was like ma. Now imagine. Your physical mother may come, but divine mother. If you have ever had a contact with her. The name of the divine is in itself a power. If it is taken with the right faith and in the right attitude, Naam Jap has a great power in it. People often say, what are the methods and techniques? The only thing which mother has said, when Satprem keeps asking us, give us a method, give us a method. He said, nothing is required, open to me. He said, but still we need a method. She says, okay, you want a method? Okay, the mantra. After his much insistence, Namocharan has power, But only if it comes from the heart and the soul. Here is the one secret of Ajamil. It is not just his mind which called out. His heart cried out. No, he'll say he was calling his son. That's the outer consciousness. His soul always knew that what a mess this fellow has, idiot has made of his life. And it definitely added something to it. Because it was a moment of crisis. So when he called Narayan, his soul reverberated. Because it knew what a waste of life. There is one chance. He is going to call his son. Let me put my little Arji along with that. Mere repetition with the mind is not enough. So she reminds. It's not just a mechanically you keep doing it. Though something will happen. But there are many other things. Whatever name is called, the power that answers is the mother. Each name indicates a certain aspect of the divine and is limited by that aspect. The mother's power is universal. Okay, fine. This part is clear. That yes, calling the name has a great power. Sri Aurobindo is saying it very clearly. And what is it that it cannot do? But karma is there, no? We keep reading about karmic law, law of karma. Maa ka naam se kya hoga? Paapi hai, adham hai. Wo sab stories hai. Ajamil adham mein na thi kya burai. This is a fantastic story. But can the divine name, can the divine grace override all this? Is it greater than the law of karma? Now Sri Aurobindo's letter again. You see, these are aspects somehow we see in public discourse, people don't talk about Sri Aurobindo. They straight away talk about planes of consciousness, layers, I don't know, so many things. All that is okay, but this is yoga. How you access the access key. I should like to say something about the divine grace. For you seem to think it should be something like a divine reason, acting upon lines not very different from those of human intelligence. Oh, if I am a sinner, what can the divine do? I have to go through the law of karma, human reason. But it is not that. Also, it is not a universal divine compassion either, acting impartially on all who approach it. And according to all prayers, so as you pray, so probably God will time to time send some help. So he is differentiating it from divine compassion. Now what he is going to say will blow off the mind of all these ideas of good and bad and their results. It does not select the righteous and reject the sinner. In fact, at one point he says, why? Because many righteous people fail. We are self-sufficient. We are a good human being. We have done everything right. They don't realize the many missing spots which they have never seen. That is left to Yamraj to show. Beta, pure zindagi attached rahe parivar se. There are some people who believe I am very honest, very. So they think I am all Mr. Right. But it's not about right and wrong. It does not select the righteous and reject the sinner. This one story, Ajamil's story. Sri Aurobindo will remind us of a few more. The divine grace came to aid the persecutor, Saul of Tarsus, who was killing the Christians. And in that process, he falls in the battlefield. And he is very exhausted. His death is near. And he is very thirsty. At that point of time, Christ comes to him. Says, you want water? He says, yes. But who are you? He says, I am Jesus. He says, your fellows I am. He says, don't worry. He knows whom to come when. And it is he who became the most ardent, not only a follower, but lot of spread of Christianity, but that's a different story altogether. So it came to the persecutor Saul of Tarsus. It came to Saint Augustine the profligate. Now what is a profligate, I hope? In a loose man of loose character. So Augustine is profligate. There is a famous thing about him that he would want to get rid of his tendencies. A kind of womanizer and things like that. But every time he would say, Lord, grant me chastity. Then he would say, utter under his breath, but not yet. There's a known story about him, but not yet. And his prayers, if you read, psychic prayers, I have not seen anywhere in the Christian world. Indian world, you have so many psychic prayers, St. Augustine's. And his was this state, he was a lawyer and all kinds of things that lawyer do, including all this. To Jagai and Madhai of infamous fame, you know their stories. They would, all the devotees of the Lord, they would hari bol, that during the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they would go and trouble them. They would throw stones. So once they had thrown stone and, you know, one of the devotees were hurt, that time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. And for the first time they saw in him the manifestation of Sri Krishna, because he took his Sudarshan Chakra. First time they saw. He used to get identified with Krishna time to time, partial identification. Shobindu has confirmed this. He was an Anshavatar. So suddenly they trembled. They were drunk. They were all kinds doing. And they fell at his feet. And the devotee tells Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please forgive them, please forgive them. They don't know what they are doing. Now we read all these stories, no? Christ saying from the cross, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. Exactly the same. There are many stories in our own scriptures. So the devotee falls at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that these fellows, it's true that they were troubling me, but they don't know. They don't know your greatness. They don't know what it is to hurt the devotees. They are hurting themselves. So then he comes back and then they get converted. There are quite a few stories even of Muslims who came to capture him, got converted simply because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was like that. So Sri Aurobindo is confirming this story and quoting it. To Bilva Mangal and of course our Ratnakar, Valmiki. You know Ratnakar's story and Bilva Mangal's the thief, and again they would kill for killing. Murder is the worst, and stealing, and the grace comes. And many others whose conversion might well scandalize the puritanism of the human moral intelligence. So what does God see if he doesn't see our moral state? Nalinida writes very beautifully in one of his articles. He sees that little thing in the heart, the psychic being, which we can't see. There was a discussion going on once in Nalinida's room, and people were discussing whether Arjuna was really a good man or he was not a very good man. So it was based on this idea that Arjuna was a flirt and all this. But I don't know why Krishna. So others were saying, no, he was none of these things. He was a very moral man. Therefore, grace came. Nalinida, as usual, would remain in his own world. Hardly he would respond unless you ask. Suddenly somebody asked him, Ki Nalinida, aapne ki bolen? So he suddenly says, Hain? Ki? He said, Arjuna. He said, Haan, he was a flirt. But grace came to him. He confirmed. He says, yes. He said, what do you mean? He said, he used to run after girls. But grace came to him. He reminded that Sri Krishna chose him. What did Sri Krishna say? He says, he is Narayan. So human intelligence, human vision, and especially the rigidly moral people, and several places Mother says that divine doesn't care for that. It is very good to, you know, because it's a very good thing for our own progress society, but the divine doesn't take that into consideration. He sees the aspiration, what is in the heart. But it can come to the righteous also to do what? Look at Sri Aurobindo's subtle humor. But it can come to the righteous also, curing them of their self-righteousness. I am a good man. I am very moral. He will make sure. You roll in the mud. You say, now what do you say? You say, Lord, ho gaya, dikha diya aapne sab. It is to bring humility. So curing them of their self-righteousness and leading to a purer consciousness beyond these things. It is a power that is superior to any rule, even to the cosmic law. For all spiritual seers have distinguished between the law and the grace. See the Bhagavad, we are coming back to it. Bhagavad tells it in the form of the story. Yamraj is saying, yes, I am the law. But there is something greater than me, which is grace. Yet it is not indiscriminate. It's not like anybody, oh, this is a quick thing. So Shivindra describes it, that you think, okay, I'll do whatever I want to do. Last minute, I'll remember the divine. He says, you will forget him. It doesn't work like that. So it has its own way of working. Now in his story, Ajamil's story, he was into yoga. He fell from yoga. We must make a difference. Of course, there can be a sudden conversion, which we are reading. But it's not like, okay, I'll keep God's name at the last moment, I'll do. You won't. I mean, you read Yoga Vasishtha and it describes your mind goes tumbling, you don't know where you are, you're disoriented, you're confused. So you won't remember. So that's why the Gita says, remember at all times. Only it has a discrimination of its own, the divine grace, which sees things and persons and the right times and seasons when it has to come with another vision than that of the mind or any other normal power. You see, in the story of Shabri, we have this. Shabri sweeps every day and says, you know, Rama will come, Ram will come. Seers, sages who were passing by, says he's gone mad. A real, I'm saying, as in the Ramayana, that why is she doing this? They would take pity, somebody will give some things. But Shabri was inwardly a very developed being. She was a tapaswini, but nobody could understand, because this woman was like a mad person. She's cleaning every day, she plucks plums and says, Rama will come. 35 years she waited. Then Ram walks in. You can imagine. She doesn't know what to do. She's plucking and tasting and giving to him, and Rama is eating. Sheshnag is saying, don't do this. He says, this is the most delicious dish I've ever found. She's tasting them to make sure that she gives only the sweet plums. And Rama takes them deliciously. And the story doesn't end there, because Rama tells him she can ask anything now. She recognizes in him the Lord. But Rama is kept hidden that inside. And when she goes with the people who were doing tapasya, she goes, they realize in him she is a goddess. And then she is released and she goes to mukti. That's the ultimate thing, that time. A state of grace is prepared in the individual, often behind, mark the adjectives, behind thick veils, not just ordinary veils, thick veils, by means not calculable by the mind. And when the state of grace comes, then the grace itself acts. Thick veils. You may be rolling in the mud, but preparing to climb to the... In fact, Kaliyug is precisely that. And Shivindra says, Kaliyug prepares for the Satyug. Because there is a great compression towards the material life, and suddenly there is a bursting. There is a preparation which goes behind the veil. There are these three powers. The cosmic law of karma, or what else? He says, it doesn't matter what you call it. Vidhi ka vidhan, vidhata. This is the law of karma. This is the lowest. The divine compassion acting on as many as it can reach through the nets of the law and giving them their chance. This is what the gurus do. Some of the really realized gurus, they can take some burden of the karma. It is their compassion. Sri Ramakrishna speaks about it. And therefore make it easy. They are acting through the net. They can't act on everybody, but those who have surrendered, whom they have given the diksha, they can act. And the divine grace, which acts more incalculably, but also more irresistibly than the others. And the mother speaks of that very clearly. My child, the divine grace can completely dissolve karma. Even the gore karma, suicide, says it can completely annul. The only question is whether there is something behind all the anomalies of life which can respond to the call and open itself. with whatever difficulty till it is ready for the illumination of the divine grace. So this is the story of Ajamil, which challenges us at many levels. All our ideas of karma and the mechanical consequences go. Yes, it operates in a certain way. Although there also it's not so much the way mechanically I took 100 rupees, so I have to give 100 rupees. No, it's the vritti of stealing. So the punishment is meant to help you with that. That's it. That's why the evolution continues. If it's only a give and take, then there would be no end to the transactions. It's not about external things. Law of karma in the Gita is explained as karma, the guna which is behind the karma. If it is sat tamo guna, it's in, you are in a deluded state. You may think you are doing good, you may think you are doing bad, but you are in a state of complete delusion because you are all yourself. In rajoguna also you are yourself, but you are doing good and bad, and the results are mixed, happiness and sorrow. That's how it brings it. Tamo guna, actions will bring more and more delusion. In rajoguna you experience joy and sorrow. The Gita doesn't say you will have be born in a, you know, with a defect in the family. None of these things. Only thing for Satuguna it qualifies. Satuguna brings peace and happiness. And if you have practiced yoga, then it says you will be born in circumstances, in a family where you will make rapid progress very soon. So this is the background of the law of karma. And greater than karma is karuna, compassion of the divine. And greater than karuna is kripa, the grace of the divine. So this is the what we see in Ajamil's story. He was pursuing yoga. It also reminds us how the fall can come. But even behind fall, if you read through the entire Bhagavad, you will see there was a grace, which you see even in the story of Ahilya, that there are tendencies within us which we don't see. We are always having the idea, I'm a good man, I'm a good man. So Ajamil also, deep inside, I am doing all the right things, checklist. But there are things hidden inside and the divine brings them out. And when they come out, sadhak sometimes can completely go what may look like a wayside. It can leave them broken right till the very end. I have seen people like that. Literally seen how the person then went into jail, all kinds of things he did, ghapla, gotala. But at the end, it is a catharsis, a release. If one has taken to the path of yoga, then in between whatever may come, what is needed is to hold on to the grace, to hold on to the divine name. Even if you don't, still there is hope. That's what the story is about. Even if you forget, the divine does not forget us. So that it's not about, of course it's best if we remember. It's great joy, it's progress, it's leaps and bounds. Imagine, this is when we have forgotten but the divine remembers, like the story of Narad. Now imagine if we can remember also, divine is never forgotten, while going through the most challenging times, not just outwardly but inwardly, even in a most fallen state, if we can remember, then how quickly he can bring us up out of every dirt and difficulty. And Sri Krishna confirms that, with that we can stop. He speaks about some souls, some beings who go through adham gati. So Ajamil is also in that category, Ajamil adham. And it says that because of their deeds, because of their actions, they go down. But even if they call my name, Arjun, remember, very quickly they are released from the coils of sin. And they should be regarded as saints. These are the words of the Gita. Because they have started calling my name, taken my name. And that's the story in our own scripture of Ratnakar, who turned none else but Valmiki, the Trikaldarshi Rishi, who writes about the story of Lord Rama, who is a dacoit, a murderer. So you see, Indian understanding of the cosmic law is so different. It's not just simple and straight like the human logic. So, Sri Aurobindo, Name Anando, Ma, 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 Jai Ma.